My name's Scott Redmond. I'm an alcoholic. Hi, everybody. I'd like to welcome the newcomers and congratulate the CHIP people and thank Josh for his great talk. And thank you so much for inviting me to come to your party tonight. This is a great Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. I love this meeting, and I've loved every time I've gotten an opportunity to come down here. I have a great life today. If you're new, I'm sure that just thrills the crap out of you. I know how happy I was for people having a good time when I got here. I was just overwhelmed with joy for them. I was thrilled for them. And I would sit and, you know, I'd listen to people go on. You know, I got sober, I got a new house, I got a new family, and then I got driving a new car, I got a good job, and I'd sit in my seat, and I would think to myself, maybe you'll go home tonight, and maybe your house will blow up. You know, maybe it'll blow up. Maybe your new family will run down the street in flames, and we'll see how spiritual you are next week. So welcome to AA. Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. If you're new, welcome. If you're a drug addict, welcome to AA. If you're a dope fiend, which is somehow worse than any of us, I'd like to welcome you to Alcoholics Anonymous. If you're like a crack monster, you know. I'm very excited. I'd like to welcome all the tweakers here tonight. Welcome all the tweakers. All right. I love you guys. You stay real fast for a while, you know, and wear out your clothes from the inside. You're the only people I know who can actually wear their clothes out from the inside. That's a really incredible thing. I like this. One guy there is all his parts of his face are moving in a different direction. That's really good. It's very nice. So if you're new, if you're a tweaker, you've licked all the features off your face. Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. I also, you know, I love you guys. You have very nicely arranged wallets. Very, very neat wallets. I'm not making fun of you. Coming close, but I'm not making fun of you. And I'll tell you why I'm not making fun of you. I don't care what you are. Just catch the disease that is outlined in our book. I don't care if you're the Bigfoot of dope addicts, if you're like a dope Goliath. I really don't care. I don't care. I did not have alcoholism when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I caught alcoholism in AA. It took me a long time to find out what alcoholism was. I didn't know what it was. I didn't know that when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous that I knew what my problem was. This is what I knew when I came to AA. I loathed myself. I hated you. I had terrible, crippling fear and sexual stuff that I was never going to admit to anybody, even though 99% of my sexual stuff involved me. Just me. You know, so if you've ever... there's nothing wrong with masturbation unless you're masturbating until you're dehydrated. That could be a problem. But not all of us did that much cocaine, but what can you do? Man, am I preaching to the choir tonight? Jesus Christ. I say this stuff at some meetings, they go, what? 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 At any rate, I hated myself, but nothing compared to how much I hated you. I hated me, but I hate you so much more than I hate me that it's difficult to describe. I'm just not a suicide guy. That's just not who I am. I'm not. I'm a homicide guy. You first. I have always preferred your death to mine every time, dude. Every time. I had this fantasy that this headline I would see in my head, Scott Redmond kills wife, kills children, and refuses to commit suicide. That was the headline I saw. And I am not knocking the suicide people. This is not a put down. I'm not putting the suicide people down at all. I'm just a homicide guy, and I think it's the flip side of the same coin. But I didn't know that I knew what my problem was. I hated you. I hated myself. I was terrified, and I had sexual misconduct I was never going to admit to anybody. And in fact, if you read the big book of AA, they say that's exactly what your problem is. That's the bizarre, that's the alchemy, that's the landscape of the spiritual disease that has made it impossible for me to be helped by well-meaning medical people, psychiatrists, and members of the clergy. That's in fact my problem. And once that bizarre spiritual sickness that and the composition of it is, again, if you read the big book, is resentments against you, me, fears, and sexual misconduct. If that's attended to, then I straighten out mentally and physically. And that has been my experience. That's absolutely been my experience. I didn't know it at the time, you know. And I had a terrible journey to Alcoholics Anonymous. I got here on April 22nd, 1985, and at the age of 33, I had grown up in the Bronx in New York City, Anybody here from the Bronx? No way. Right? You here for, with the Witness Protection Program? Oh, yeah? Yeah. to a completely insane family. My family was and is very, very crazy. And my wife never believed me about my family until she met them. And my mother threw an engagement party for us, and my Aunt Rose came and wore her wig backwards. It had a bun on it, so the bun was on her forehead. And they're just insane. If you got anything for free in my family, it meant it was stolen. And I had an uncle who used to get, he was a welder, and he used to get free bales of steel wool. Like, here's your check and a complimentary bale of steel wool. What the hell is that all about? And his wife took a decorating course and made throw pillows and filled all the throw pillows with the free, readily available steel wool. And that stuff works its way through on you after a while. So, like, when I was at their house, when you looked at the room, everybody was moving like a little bit, you know. The whole room was like a pulsing, living organism. And they're just psychotic. There was mental and physical abuse and chronic institutionalization and suicide attempts. And if you're new here, all I've got is good news for you, because my family did not have one single thing to do with making me an alcoholic. I'm not telling you they weren't crazy and that I wasn't injured. I was injured terribly. And I'm not telling you I didn't have to do stuff about that. I had to do a lot of stuff about that. I'm telling you they didn't make me a drunk. If they had made me a drunk, see, one of the reasons I was not an alcoholic by the time I got here is I had been in psychotherapy for 18 years by the time I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. I was going to be dead, but I was going to understand it. Okay. And if my family had made me a drunk, the therapy would have worked. I did good work in therapy. And I got no beef against therapy. I got no malpractice insurance. I don't tell people where they can go and what they can take and all of that stuff. You know, I just, and that's just me. That's my deal. It says on page 133 of our book, if you need a doctor, go get one. I got no beef against therapy. My colossal mistake is I was trying to treat my alcoholism with psychotherapy, which is like showing up at a gunfight with a knife. It's insane. Okay. The idea of therapy, for those of you who might have been in therapy, is to uncover, discover, and unravel, to shine the light on things, to free associate, to share with a therapist, and come up with a better resolution for your anxiety. Okay? Has anybody here ever been told they're neurotic, that you've got neurosis, that you're neurotic? Okay, what they mean is that you have a problem, and your solution for the problem is not good. It's not good. It's a neurosis. In other words, your solutions are worse than your problems. This sound familiar at all? Okay? So I'm neurotic. I got a problem, but my answers to the problem are never satisfying. They never make me feel better. So I go to therapy to uncover, to discover, and come up with a better answer for my anxiety. Does this make sense? Okay, here's my problem. Doctor, I feel terrible. Why? I was so drunk this afternoon. I was too drunk to walk, so I drove. Well, what are we going to do about that? What are you going to do about that? Doctor, I feel terrible. Why? This afternoon, I sharpened a hypodermic needle on the back of a matchbook striker and sucked some heroin up through a fluffed-up cigarette filter and injected it in my arm. I just feel terrible. What are we going to do about that? What are you going to do about that? What are you going to do? You're going to ask me, what were you thinking just before you did that? The Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous says, if you pursue me and you ask me why I've done this insane thing over and over again, why I have done it despite the attendant misery and suffering that follows every single time, and I stay with you and I don't blow you off, odds are I'll have no more idea than you do. Because I have become so sick, and the ice around my heart has become so thick, and my thinking is so bizarre that I keep thinking myself into a drink I can't stop taking. And if you're special and a drug addict, try some controlled crack smoking. Just fill your mouth up with crack smoke and say, not in the mood, blow it out, and hats will fill the air. But I didn't know what I was up against. And I just had a real rough time of it growing up in the Bronx, and you know, I had to hang out with the people who were doing what I wanted to do, and stole cars for a while with this group of social climbers, and then the 60s hit, and I didn't want to be a drunk. I really didn't. I didn't want to be an alcoholic, and I was in pretty deep by that time. I had been asked to leave the school I was attending, and I overcame my alcohol problem with marijuana. I'd like to welcome all the pot smokers here tonight. You remember WOW, right? WOW. WOW. And right after WOW usually came...
What? What? Wow. What? Wow. What? Wow. What? Wow. What?
Watching a pot smoker is like watching a dog try to run on linoleum. There's like a lot of activity but no movement. They can't get a claw in the rug. They just can't get the deal moving forward. I conquered marijuana with pills, and I triumphed over pills with cocaine. Cocaine is an excellent drug. It's particularly good for sex if you enjoy sex from the Neolithic period. A couple of you didn't hear that because you were going, yeah, yeah. Could you wipe the foam out of the corner of your mouth there? And I overcame that terrible cocaine problem with heroin. Heroin's a very dark, complicated, artistic drug. Then you cross the line and become a vomiting pig. It's just a little hop, skip, and a jump. And then I drank till I don't want to be a drunk. And I went to therapy and swapped substances and started to die. I was 21, and I was hitchhiking down from the Bronx down to Manhattan. I had slammed some dope, and my aunt and uncle pulled up on the West Side Highway and threw me in the back of the car. My father had had a massive stroke and was in the hospital, and I couldn't show up for him the night that he died. And shortly after that, I was acting in a Broadway play, and this usherette with long brown hair walked in, and I took one look at her, and I didn't even say hello to her. I just fell in love with her. I told the other guys in the show to leave her alone, and we started a life together in New York, and we had a great time, a great time. One of the most misused and misquoted lines in the Big Book of AA for me is I've heard people say, my worst day in here is better than my best day out there. No. No. I had a great time out there. Let's see. A pound of cocaine in an all-female jazz band or a candlelight at the Cider House. What do I want to do? What do I want to do? What do I want to do? What will be more fun? What the book says is I wouldn't trade my worst day in here for my best day out there because I won't live like a loser anymore. I won't trade this way of life. It doesn't say that one was better than the other because for me, it just wasn't. You're going to hear some wacky stuff about alcoholism if you're new. You're going to hear some wacky stuff about it. Some of it will make sense, yes, some of it won't. The stuff that I've heard when people say alcoholics are or alcoholics do this, not once have I heard anything like that that has pissed me off have I found in the Big Book of AA, ever. And a lot of it, some of it really works for some people and doesn't work for others. I've heard in AA that alcoholics don't like change, don't like it. Not true for me. I just don't like change I don't like. But I seem to have a boundless facility to enjoy change I like. I'm nuts about change I like. I've heard alcoholics are perfectionists. I'm a pig. I'm not. The only time I become a perfectionist is when my wife is taking care of me. Then my perfectionism explodes. It seems to be endless. But my favorite is that alcoholics are above average intelligence. I have only heard this at Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. I have never, ever heard it. I've never heard it at an Al-Anon meeting, ever. Nancy and I had a beautiful son named Micah, and he was really welcomed into the world. 2 years and 9 months later, our son Jesse was born, and he was not welcomed into the world. Nobody even came to the hospital. Nobody called. Nobody sent a flower. It just hurt too much to be around us. And my sons became very, very sick from prolonged exposure to me. My wife became insane. She became a tongue-chewing, babbling idiot. My children became so terribly ill. One day I came home and I We had these 32-ounce iced tea tumblers in the house, and I came home and I popped a cork on a bottle of wine, and I emptied the entire bottle of wine into this cup, and I turned around and my wife was giving me her pre-Al-Anon rat face. I said, "What?" She said, "What are you doing?" And I looked at her and I said, "I'm having a glass of wine. Can a man have a glass of wine in his own home?" When my son Michael was 5, he came up to me and said, "Dad, is there anything such as God?" And I looked into the eyes of my perfect 5-year-old baby boy and I said, "No, no." I lied to him. You know, I lied to him, and I don't know if there's a worse thing you can tell a kid. I mean, basically what you're telling the kid is, you know, when it's late at night and it's dark and you can't go to sleep and you're scared, tough, because that's all there is. I mean, that's really what you're telling the child. And I thought I was giving him the real deal so he wouldn't have to be played like a sap and a sucker, and I didn't know what I had done. I had rearranged my life to accommodate the walk to the drink, because I'm going to get to the drink. And if you're my wife, my lover, my buddy, my bride, my child, my dreams, my career, if you get in between me and the drink, you will either become something less than human. I'll objectify you. You'll become paper mache. You'll become something less than human, or you'll vanish. And how much vanishing can a baby bear before the baby believes they don't exist? And in our alcoholic home, the kids were locked into two basic choices. To either become blindlessly aggressive and crazy en route to a goal that never got attained, or to just throw the towel in and say, "What's the use? What's the use?" That's the paradigm. That's the template of alcoholic thinking. That's what it is in us. But I didn't know that my kids had alcoholism. I didn't know my wife had it. I hadn't read there is a solution. I didn't know about the warped lives of blameless wives and children. I didn't know it. I didn't even have alcoholism yet. And I was dying from it, and I was killing my wife and my kids. I was acting on Broadway when Nancy and I met. This is where we wound up. 8 years later, we had an 8-year suicide pact we called a marriage. A couple of months before I got sober, I got into an accident, and I went to the doctor and said, "You know, Mr. Edmund, you have high blood pressure. You're going to have to lose some weight." And I said, "You know, I would really like to do that, but I drink alcohol and I smoke marijuana before I go to bed every night, so I'm not going to be able to." And the doctor said, "Why don't I prescribe some medication for you?" And I said, "What a country." And he prescribed for me chloral hydrate. You know what? You say chloral hydrate in most groups of people, and they don't go, "Ah," like they're looking at a puppy. Chloral hydrate is a knockout drop. It's a fast-acting sedative. It's like getting hit by a sap. It's a Mickey. And I love my knockout drops. I love them. And Nancy comes home. I'm eating handfuls of knockout drops, standing in the hallway, slamming body parts into the wall to keep myself awake so I can enjoy my knockout drops. Because you don't want to waste a perfectly good knockout drop. So I keep eating pills, slamming body parts into the wall until I just seize, keel over, and I'm going to bed. And I can't get out of bed to go to the bathroom because I got so much Mickey in me. So now I'm incontinent like the rest of the 33-year-old men in America. And I one night I got up and wet the wall instead of the bed. And the next morning Nancy was excited. He wet the wall. He's headed towards the bathroom. Things are looking good, you know. It's progress, not perfection, right? Go, Dad, go. The night my father died, I knew what was wrong. And I knew how to change it. I couldn't possibly deal with the fact that I couldn't show up for my old man the night that he died. I couldn't even go in and give him a kiss and tell him I love him and say goodbye. Because when the ice around your heart's that thick and you're that spiritually sick, for me, my father wasn't carrying his light into another room. He was dying, and dead is dead, and rotting is rotting, and that's what it is. And I collapsed as a son, a man. That's okay. And I knew what was wrong that night, and I knew I couldn't be the guy who couldn't show up for his old man the night he died. So I swore to myself that night that I'd never put a needle in my arm again, and I didn't, not for 13 years. And by the time I did put a needle in my arm again, my sons were 6 and 3. Micah, my older son, was making involuntary clicking noises with his throat that he couldn't stop making. He could barely read or write. He was diagnosed as functionally retarded because his small motor skills were all screwed up. Jesse was playing a war game and pretending that he was a robot, but he couldn't stop. And the feeling that the people who were trying to help him was that it hurt so much to be a person, it just hurt too much, and being a robot was just better. And this war game that he was playing, at least he could control the war in his head instead of the war he was in. And I didn't even know he had alcoholism. And I'm describing alcoholism. I'm describing the impact of alcoholism on a child. And my son, Michael, was diagnosed as functionally retarded with the small motor stuff, and there was nothing wrong with him. He was so disrupted from being scared all the time and interrupted of things never coming out the way they were said they were going to be coming out, he was just totally distracted and disrupted all the time, and that's how it manifested itself in him. And on April 22nd, 1985, I crossed the line I swore I would never cross again. I put a needle in my arm. And I called my therapist. And I told him what I had done. And he said to me that morning the exact same thing that Carl Jung told the man who 12-stepped the man who 12-stepped Bill Wilson. I didn't know it at the time, but I found it out after I read our literature, and it made me feel really good. Carl Jung said to that guy, "I can't help you." And that therapist that morning said, "You know what? There's absolutely nothing that could be done for you. You either have to go to a mental institution or go to a meeting of Narcotics Anonymous or Alcoholics Anonymous." Now, why I went to the AA meeting, I don't know. I really don't know. Most other days, I would have gone to the Nut House. I'm a guy. I was told I needed surgery on my hand while I was drinking. He said, I had knee surgery on my hand. The doctor said, "You know, Mr. Redmond, you're going to need general anesthetic." And I said, "Oh, general anesthetic. That's great." Normal people don't get excited about general anesthetic. There's no normal person who goes, "Oh, man, this is great." But I know something about general anesthetic. I know that when they hit you with it, they say count backwards from 100. And you go 100, 99, right? I love 99. I love 99. And from the heads going up down, it looks like some of you love 99 too. But just like I said before, I won't trade my life in for it. I won't live like a sap anymore. And so I don't know why I didn't go to that mental institution, but I didn't. And you know what? I don't know. I probably never will know, because God is absolute and complete mystery. You know, I believe that's what the mystics say, that's what the canonized saints say, and that's what our book says. No one can fully comprehend or define that power which is God. I don't know why, but I went to that AA meeting. I went to a place called Unit A in the deep San Fernando Valley, and I walked into that room that morning, and I took one look around, and I said, "Oh, my God, Alcoholics Anonymous. How did I wind up in Alcoholics Anonymous? How lame is this? This is beyond lame. This is beyond church, beyond synagogue. This is some plateau of lameness I never even imagined was available to me. Alcoholics Anonymous." And the room looked like it was the product of like 200 years of inbreeding to me. I swear to God. I swear, man. They were like identical twins carving their initials on each other's feet in the back of the room, you know? And everything was America. I'm America. You're America. The furniture and coffee are miracles, too. And then the AA unsolicited advice guy, he came up to me after the meeting. You know him, right? He's got a belt buckle large enough to serve an entire fish on. "Do I want what you've got?" "No." "No, but thanks for spitting on me. I really appreciate it. See you next week. Do we do arts and crafts next week? Are we going to hook a rug? You know, what's the deal?" And the kind of bully I am, you see, I'm a nice guy. I'm a sterling human being, you know. So as the guy's talking to me, I'm laughing and nodding and praying that his face just burst into flame, you know. But he just goes up in a tower of smoke. "I'm here. Isn't it bad enough that I'm here? It's over. I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous. Now I got to listen to you?" I just couldn't believe it. And I went back there every day for a year, and I, you know, the only reason that I can imagine that I went back is because I was out of plans. If you're new here, I pray for you that you're out of plans. If you're new here and you have a plan, it's probably a butte. Don't use your plan. Grab one of us and after the meeting and tell us your plan. We want to know the plan. My favorite newcomer plan, and it's the most utilized one I've seen over the years, seriously, is the one more dope deal to set myself up financially for sobriety plan. Dude, it is out there. And it gets, it seems the closer you get to Lemon Grove, the more it's used, kind of. I don't know. That's what, it's going to wind up on the soft literature rack eventually. I came back to AA for 6 months, enjoyed the gift of step none. And I knew I was going to drink. My wife had reached out to the Al-Anon family groups, and I saw some incredible stuff start happening to her in her life, and I wanted what she had. And she said she saw it in me, and I saw it in her. And I knew I was going to drink. I had hung around here for 6 months, and I had seen the AA drill hundreds and hundreds of times in just 6 months. People came in and did the work and changed. People came in, didn't do the work, didn't change, got sick, got sicker, got to the podium, shared their gift with us. And shared their ass right out of the door, or stayed here and became columns of human sewage and sexual predators. Although I judge no man. I judge no man. Don't turn on me now, because I'm too spiritually developed. And I asked this guy to sponsor me. Why'd I do that? Great guy. Wasn't afraid to be an AA goody-goody. Talked about the work. And he was a great guy. He made sure I'd done some reading from the big book of AA, and he invited me to his house, and he read chapter 5 to me. And he took me through the first two steps, and we reached step 3 and got on our knees and said a prayer, which I felt was unnecessary and embarrassing, but I did it anyway. And then he went back and he gave me instructions on how to do a fourth step from the big book of AA. And I stopped feeling like I was stealing somebody's chair here. I came back and read on my inventory when I was 9 months sober. I did step 6 and 7 for the first time, which have really become the centerpiece of my relationship with God. And then it came time to do my 8-step list. And I try to share this anytime I talk because it's simply the best reading of step 8 I've ever heard. And I heard it when I was really newly sober. I was a couple of weeks sober, and I was at my first home group, which was the men's group, Monday night men's group at the North Hollywood group on Radford Street. And there was a guy there, had never read chapter 5 before. His name was Nino. He had a heavy New York accent. I've never seen the cat again. I just saw him this one time. I was a couple of weeks sober. And he had hospital plastic on. He came in the hospital group, reading chapter 5 for the first time. And he got up to step 8, and he read, "Made a list of all those we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all." Jesus Christ! And he looked out into the room as if to say, "Have you seen this? I mean, do you know what the hell is in here? Dude." Which I totally identify with, because 8 was the only thing I saw on the list. I didn't see any other step. Not those people, not that money. I would not have taken that much money if I knew I had to give it back. No way, no way. You think I'm a moron? You know, if you're new, 8's, don't worry about it. It's 8 steps from where you are. And 8's not even really the annoying one. It's 9. It's the give it back one. 8's not the give it back. It's the list and the willingness one. Right? So I did my 8-step list, and I didn't know what I was going to do about it. I didn't know what I was going to do about the boys and Nancy and my dad, and just didn't know what I was going to do. And I was blessed with a sponsor who refused to tell me. He said, "Do your job. Do your job in Alcoholics Anonymous. See what happens." I couldn't sit down with my wife and kids and apologize. "I'm sorry" were the two most useless words in my vocabulary. I couldn't even get them out of my mouth. "I'm sorry, you're retarded, son." What insanity, you know? So what I did was, my sponsor said, "Address your inventory as your spiritual task. See what you can do." So because I had all these resentments against myself for being a terrible father, I didn't understand the biggest thing, that if there was anything my sponsor showed me, which was the triumphant arch through which I passed to freedom, we're working on my inventory. And I grew up in a Jewish home. I was resentful against Nazis for slaughtering Jews. I was resentful of one of my aunts for, when I was a little boy, she pinned my arms down so I could get hit. And, you know, it says on page 62 that selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles. Driven isn't nudged or influenced. Driven is under the lash of, in slavery to. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. We step on the toes of our fellows, and they retaliate seemingly without provocation, but invariably, which means without variation, every time, no loopholes, we find that we've made decisions based on self, which later placed us in a position to be hurt. Bullshit! Can't be. I'm as if let Nazis for slaughtering Jews. What have I done to make that happen? What's my part? Nothing. I got no part. My part's not even a phrase in the book. It's not even in the book. I don't know where it came from. My part's not in the book. Faults and defects are. What's my part with my aunt pinning me? I'm sorry, man. Nothing. That's not okay to do to a kid. To hold a kid down so another kid can beat him up. It ain't okay. Some people might think it isn't, but this is my inventory, so I'll share about it. And I said to my sponsor, and he said, Scott, you don't get it. They're not asking you if the event is your fault. They're asking you if the resentment is your fault. With no exception and no loophole. I'm resentful at Nazis for slaughtering Jews. What are the defects of character? What is it that if God would remove from me, the resentment would be gone? I'm not living in today. I'm a grudge holder. I'm a character assassin. I hear somebody's got a German accent. I don't even want to know him. So I'm a bigot, a hypocrite, and a racist. Ugly. Ugly to look at. But if I didn't, I wouldn't be free today. What would a reasonable person do? They wouldn't like Nazis, and they might work politically against Nazis. Act like a citizen. Give money to people who were fighting Nazis. Do something. But I didn't do that. I just felt sorry for myself. Self-pity, man. If you could bottle self-pity, it would not crack off the market in a week. And armed with that, I started building a life. I was able to get rid of my resentments and examine them, because sometimes the event was my fault and sometimes it wasn't. And I got to show up at my kid's school and say to the teachers, you know when kid's got a lot of potential and he doesn't use it, some teachers get very pissed off. And I'd sit down with the teachers and say, you know what, my son's just been, he's been terribly ill because he's been living with me and I've been very sick. And we've started a new thing in our family and we're getting better. Can you help us? Not once has anyone said no. Not once. They said, yeah, we'll test the boys. Let's see what's going on. They tested them. They needed help. They got special ed. Special ed teacher said, get them into music. Get them into sports. Let's see if some big motor stuff will help the little motor stuff. So I did the right thing. I started doing the right thing. My sons have received 17 appropriate birthday gifts on the day of their birthday. Not once in 17 years have they received the day after radioactive guilt gift from the only place that would take a hot check from me. Here's some drywall, boys. Oh, the kids are loving the drywall. It's Pokemon drywall. So Jesse wanted to play drums. I went to the store and got him a drum pad. That's a piece of wood with a piece of rubber and two sticks. It's a couple of bucks, but I did the right thing. We didn't have any money. I did the right thing. My son asked me for something, and I did the best I could. And I went back to my home group, and I told the guys what I did. I'll tell you why. It wasn't to brag. It's because they wanted to know. It's because I had a home group like this where 50 people have commitments and people are hanging out and people are urging each other forward. Listen to the chips here. People are like screaming for each other. They're down. They're into it. They're in the game, man. That's what my home group was like. The guys flipped. They loved it, you know? And a couple of weeks later, the AA drum set showed up at my house. There were like a lot of burnout drummers in my group at that time. So guys are showing up with these Megadeth drums, you know, dude. And Jesse had this drum set that when he sat behind, he just disappeared. You couldn't even see him. And Josh knows my kids. They're both monster musicians now. Monster musicians. A couple of years ago, they played the House of Blues on Sunset and burnt the dump down. Burn it down. They're playing hip-hop music to this packed room, 800-900 kids, elbow to elbow, and over on the side of this group of weeping middle-aged alcoholics. And the kids are kind of going, what is with the crying old people, man? What is, you know, usually they bring backup singers, but... These cats look like they've been around the block, you know. Another one of my kids on tour right now. He's going to be playing the House of Blues again. He's been in. And I want to tell you, if you're new, that's just what's happening in my house. I don't think that's because God likes us more than the people whose kids are being annihilated. That's just what's happening in my house. We got nailed in the Northridge earthquake, real bad, really bad. A guy died right near us. Our house got wrecked up. I got a bad physical injury. And shortly after, I was at an AA function out of town, in another country, as a matter of fact. And this woman came up to me at that AA function and said, oh, she used to live in L.A. And she said, oh, I'm so glad God got us out of L.A. before the quake. And I said, oh, so he likes you. He likes you, but we're crap, but he likes you. And she said to me, I guess he just felt you had some lessons to learn. Dude, I'm out of here. I am out of here. If I had that God, that God's keeping her sober, that God wouldn't keep me sober for 2 seconds. If I had a God up there saying, get him, get the Redmond boy, get him. Get him, turn his wife to salt, kill his goat, put a finger in his eye, get him. No evacuation plan for you, fat boy. I'm out of here. I can't stay sober in that world. I cannot stay sober in a world where I see the deliberate hand of God in people suffering. That's not the world I live in. God is absolute mystery, complete mystery. And when I say he does this or does this, then I'm prescribing some sort of job for him. You know, my God expects me to do my job in Alcoholics Anonymous. If it's to show a guy how to stay sober with this incredible thing I'm going through with my kids, or how to show a guy how to stay sober if my kids get injured or killed. And at God, man, I know a lot of people in Alcoholics Anonymous who have gone through that tragedy and stayed sober and showed me how to do it. I don't think God, Nancy and I are married 26 years. It's like the longest marriage outside of Appalachia of anybody our age in the United States, I think. But there are other people I'm sure have been married as long. You know, you don't get 26 years for murder. At any rate, don't tell her. But we have a great time together. That's not because my God loves us more than the people who are getting divorced. If my job is to show a guy how to go through a sober divorce or have a sober, loving marriage, that's my job. My God's not. I can't live in a world where my God's going, let's key your car. It's boils for you. I think you're due for a rash, don't you think? I can't live in that world. You know, I would like to see her after her next lesson, but at any rate, if you're new, welcome to AA. The good news is our problem mainly rests in our mind. The big book of AA, as far as I know, is the only book, the text about a recovery from a fatal illness that contains the sentence, we absolutely insist on enjoying life. There's no book about cholera or malaria that says, oh, malaria is a hoot. You're going to love malaria. You'll meet other people with malaria. It's great. And then you'll meet people who just caught malaria. It just doesn't get any better than that. My sponsor used to say that Alcoholics Anonymous was the only recovery from a fatal illness he knew of that left the sufferer in better condition than they were in before they contracted the disease. Wow. Pretty great deal. The bad news is our problem mainly rests in our mind. Some years ago, I met a guy at a meeting, a new guy, and I went home and he called me and he talked to me for an hour. And I said, four times so you'd know I wasn't dead. And he told me he had been stalking several women and he had a restraining order out against him, but he's 2 weeks sober and it's different now. And at the end of the hour, he said to me, I feel so alone. And I said, what are you talking about? I don't even know you and I just listened to you for an hour without interrupting. What do you mean you feel alone? And he said, well, I mean, I don't have a woman. And I said to him, what exactly would you be bringing to a relationship right now besides stalking skills? What are you bringing to the party? People 2 weeks into remission from leukemia are not having dating problems, man. Alcoholics are because our problem mainly rests in our mind. Years ago, Nancy's walking through our bedroom. She knows I'm on the line with a new guy, and she hears me say into the phone, okay, let's say the aliens are coming. She stopped short. She's not missing a word of this. I said, look, man, I'm not telling you the aliens aren't coming. That's an outside interest. They might be coming. I have no opinion on it according to the traditions. But I do have one question. Why are they coming for you? Why have they traversed a universe for your sorry ass? You have no life. You're 11 days sober. You can't find your ass with a flashlight. Why you? Plus, he's sleeping with a Bible on his chest to ward them off. So they're going to traverse the universe, walk into his room and go, oh no, the Bible, let's go home. So I'm sharing this at my home group sometime later, and I look up, and the cat in the story walks into the room, and I'm looking, and I'm sharing the story, and he's going like this. Oh, shit. If you're new here and the aliens are coming for you, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. Welcome home. Thanks so much for having us down tonight.